Welcome to Glazed Over, a podcast from the CCSA with me, Amy Williams.
And me, Christine Steele. We are so excited to talk with our guestpert.
Yep, that's all right.
Guestpert?
I think you just coined a new term.
I like you. We are so excited to talk with our guest experts to bring support and inspiration for small business owners when we're feeling glazed over and burnout.
We'll be talking about ideas that we as business owners may have covered in the past but need a bit of refresher on. We'll discuss life in the paint your own pottery world while also speaking to guest experts inside and outside the industry to tackle a range of topics.
Join us for business tips, painting tricks, pottery talk, and gabbing with our guests.
That's so cute.
I feel like she should be able to get something out of that.
I agree.
If she can't, we won.
Glazed Over is brought to you by the CCSA, the Contemporary Ceramic Studios Association. Thank you to our moderators, Amy Williams and Christine Steele. Executive production by Louise Blazuki. Learn more about the CCSA at ccsaonline.com.
Hi, welcome to Glazed Over. I am here with Jamie McCabe. And we have Louise here subbing in for our Amy. I forgot what to put in there for why, so let me keep talking.
Good morning, Christine. Hi, Jamie. Yeah, Amy is out today, so I'm your other pod mod. Jamie McCabe joins us from Clay Cafe Avalon, which is in Nova Scotia. Right? No, Newfoundland. We just had that conversation. Newfoundland. And again, tell us, it's 11:30 where you are, but it's 10 a.m. where we are.
Yeah, it's 11:30. So Newfoundland has a half hour time zone difference than everybody
else.
They
got you all messed up.
That
means that you get to plan summer camp way before everyone else, right?
That's right. A half an hour before you all.
Awesome. I'm so excited to dive into all summer camp things. I am on the path right now to get kind of organized a little bit. So I can't wait to hear all of the wonderful things that you have to teach us and give us the tips and tricks and then the dirty secrets. So I'm excited.
Let's start with who Jamie is. Jamie, tell us about Clay Cafe.
Clay Cafe is in Newfoundland, Canada, and we've been in business for about 15 years now. This will be our 16th year in December. And loving it. I love what I do every day. So, you know, when you find something you love, it doesn't feel like work ever.
What all do you carry in your studio?
Oh, okay. So we do glass fusing, stained glass, walk-in pottery, canvas classes, clay wheel, clay hand building. And I think that's it. We just recently, it's like everything. Like even if the staff have like a great idea or a hobby that they do, like looming, the staff want to bring in like hat looming now. It's winter time. So we're going to give that a go too. So anything creative and fun.
I want to come visit.
I want to come play. Stained glass is like the newest thing, right? How long have you been doing stained glass?
Oh, probably about 3 years now. And it.
Oh, wow.
Oh my gosh. It is like sold out, sold out, sold out, sold out. So, we did start off with glass fusing and then we found somebody who knew about stained glass. So we kind of kicked that up a notch, went to the stained glass. It's not much more in supplies, I guess, than glass fusing, just a few extra things. But it sells out. So we're looking to kind of take it to the next notch now and, you know, maybe do a 2-part class or a 6-week class or something where they can make something bigger than just their little pieces they make in one class.
And you're going to teach a class at convention on that, right? Is that what I heard?
I don't teach it though. I'm just the creative mind behind it all. And then I just pull the team together. So I don't teach too much.
And I've been watching yours. And then there's a place in Maryland that does it all the time that I see it pop up and you have the torches and right?
We have like, it's like a little soldering iron and you just gotta like line it up all along the edges. Like I said, I know nothing about it. I just bought an online class and said, here's staff, watch it and tell me all the supplies. So and then they took it over and they practiced.
Have you owned for all 15 years, Jamie?
Yes. Yes, I have.
You're the mama. You were the creator and everything. That's
awesome. We started off with 1,200 square feet, and then about 5-6 years ago, we moved to 3,200 square feet. We try and fill that as much as we can.
And Christine, you have like 8,000 square feet, right?
I do, and I don't even use all of it.
Wow.
I just added on an extra 4,000 square feet and I don't know what to do with it. So, we kind of use it a little bit for a party room, but it's, I don't even use all of it yet.
Do you have
it
wheels?
Sounds like a stained glass workshop is where it's going to be.
Right? We do. We turned our old party room into a playground and then moved the playground or the party room into the other area. So that was, it was pretty neat.
Yeah, I could use more space. I keep secretly like sending voodoo vibes to the neighbors next door to be like, you need a new space, right? And then I'll just take over that one.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
That's exactly. The garage moved out and I was like, oh, that was awesome.
I figure it'll happen when it's the right time. So I'm just waiting.
So how long have you been doing summer camps?
We've been doing summer camps for, I'd say, almost all of the 15 years. I can't recall if I did it the first summer that we were open or if it was the following summer, but we've kind of honed in on it since then, having the two different spaces and, you know, getting your shit together. You know, it takes a couple of years to kind of get in your ebb and flow of like the business and how it works and the marketing and all that good stuff.
How many kiddos do you host a summer roughly?
I just got that number this morning. So I do full-time week-long camps and then part-time. And we took 70 kids in full-time and 394 part-time. So, okay, with that being said, that sounds like a lot of numbers and a lot of people, but that is over the 8 weeks. So, you know, 394 part-time kids could be like 5 to 13 kids a day, every morning and or afternoon. And then 70 kids would be broken up over those 8 weeks as full week ones. But I kind of did a little number crunching just to say, you know, if you're not doing summer camps yet, I think it worked out to be about $28,000 in having 70 full-time kids and $17,000 for having the part-time kids come. So like that's quite a bit of extra income. It does take up your whole day though, because it's from, you know, 8 till 5-ish. So there's that. But we open it up to part-time kids as well, because we want to be super flexible for parents. We were always getting calls saying, well, like, I don't need a sitter on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I just need all day Tuesday and Thursday. And I said, okay, well, you can sign up for the full week for $350, which is technically 10 classes for $35 plus tax, or you sign up for individual classes, but you're going to pay $40 plus tax per class. And it works.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
When you say part-time, so people, what I'm hearing is that people can drop in for particular days, but can they do half day or?
Yeah. Yeah. This is what I love about it. And some people can't, they're like, oh my God, how do you do that? So first of all, we use an online booking system. We use Occasions. I'm not sure what everybody else uses, but we have it set up in a way that when we look at our calendar, people will sign up for the full week. So then I'm going to have a class list of my full week students, but I do have to be attentive because I can only take 24 maximum in that room. So I do have to kind of keep paying attention as to how many part-time sign up. So then what happens is I create a half day camp for the AM from 9 to 12 and the PM from 1 to 4. So it's a 3-hour class. But if you book the morning and the afternoon class, you can pack a lunch and stay all day because my full-time students are staying all day anyway. So sometimes people will just do a morning class or an afternoon class here or there. Or they'll stay all day and just pack a lunch and stay with the full week one. So I do have to pay attention that, you know, if my number's getting up there that I've got like 13 full times, then I'm going to cut my half day kids down available for booking for like, say, 8 or 10, until that fills up.
And that makes so much sense because I've done different art camps and you're not continuing the project throughout the day. Like you work on something and then you stop. So it completely makes sense that the way that it kind of flows, I love that. I guess I never really thought about that because there are people that say, I can't make it this time. I can't make it this time. So it's like, okay, cool. It doesn't hurt the people that can.
We do Mondays is our clay day. But they never paint those clay projects. Like we don't have to try and rush it to have it ready for Friday to paint at the end of the week. They just get an email saying your clay projects are ready to paint. Bring the kids back in and have a paint date with them and finish it off on your own time. So again, it's not like I have to pick a filler class for Friday. If a half day kid shows up now, I got to be like, okay, what project am I going to do for this half day kid? Because the Monday's group or Monday's kid is, you know, finishing their project on Friday. So every single day is a different class that should be finished in that 3-hour time frame. It works out really well for us.
I thought so. I know. I feel like, I think sometimes we overcomplicate things. And in my head, I'm like, okay, I have to have a plan for every kid who's going to show up and it has to include every single thing, but it doesn't. They show up that day. We're doing journaling that day and that's that, or we're doing clay building and they come back and paint it. That's so smart. And I think that the email is really key there because then that is my problem is that we do so many projects in a week long summer camp and then no one comes to pick them up. And if they have to come back to paint it, they're more likely to come back and paint it and pick it up.
Yeah. Well, you have like, if you use Occasions and I'm sure other ones do the same thing, you can just email the whole group. So I'll just like, when all the clay projects are ready from the, say the first week of July, then I just go into my full-time camp weeks and hit email everybody to say, hey, everybody, your projects are ready. Your clay pieces, you can just come back another time and paint them when it's convenient for you. Da, 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 da. You know, check out our other classes coming up or camps coming up, have the link in there. And then my half day camps, I'll just go to each one of those and be like, hey, your plates you made on this day at this camp theme are going to be ready. And then they all go in a bin labeled that day, AM or PM camp. And what the camp is a plate or something like that. So then they'll come in and say, oh, we made a plate in July, whatever's camp. And it's all labeled in our bins.
I love that. Now, do you post what project you're doing each day? Do you have that all advertised in your, or do you keep it like a secret or what do you, or like a surprise? I don't want to say secret, but.
We do. And here's the challenging part is that we never, I don't think ever, have we ever repeated a class we've done from the previous summer. So that is about 90 or 100 classes that we come up with every single summer because we want the kids to keep coming back. So, you know, let's say, oh, we're taking we need childcare on this week, but that's Princess Week or whatever week. And they did that one last year. Like they're not going to sign up for your camp. So we try and change it up. Mondays are always like your clay day. So it's usually a clay project in the morning and a clay in the afternoon because it avoids like the whole trying to clean up and reset before the afternoon kids come. And then Tuesdays, usually pottery. Wednesday could be like a mixed media and some slime or something like that. Thursdays, canvas. Fridays are pottery again. And Friday afternoon is always our movie afternoon. So we just pick a movie, say the kids are watching a movie. If they want to wear their pajamas, we're going to serve them some popcorn. And they're going to create a project that goes along with it. I try and make sure that every project that they do is functional, because we don't want like all the little knickknacks hanging around, you know? So I try and make sure it's a mug, a bowl, a plate, a candle holder, you know, something they can use. Even in our bee camp, the clay project that they made was actually like a clay funnel. And you stuck it into the ground, but at the top was kind of shaped like a flower, because if you put water and sugar in that, then the bees come. So like functional, you know what I mean?
Like, I want to come up to your studio and play. I want to so bad. Can I come? Like, what's your age limit? So am I to come to a camp?
Yeah. So we do a theme. It makes it a heck of a lot easier coming up with projects if you can at least start with a theme. So I'll just give you, a couple of the theme ones that we had last year, but I know they can't see us, but we have like a camp binder, and it has every single week, every single project is in there. The binder's laid out by week. And then we have filler things in between as well. So when I have like a camp person who is my camp instructor, we try to fill this binder before camp starts, obviously, with every single project, all the instructions, any type of filler crafts that can go in between to kind of relate to the theme as well. Yeah, so it's a big, thick binder by the time we get to like 100 classes. But last year we did like Picasso with pets, and Disney Bee Cozy Week, which was stuff for your rooms, bath bombs, picture frames, Bug Week, Gamer Week, Animal Week, Nintendo Week, and then Sweets and Snacks Week. So, and a lot of those projects we do get from CCSA. I love going to the guides and just seeing, you know, what we can get from there. And they have summer camp guides as well. So, you know, you can utilize those just to start if that's, you know, if you're looking to start a summer camp.
How many weeks is your summer?
We had 9 weeks last year. So I like to start my camp the very first week that the kids are out of school. So for here, that's like the first week of July / last week in June. And then it goes right to almost, I think they start back school like September 4th. So however many weeks are usually in between, it's like at least 8, but there's probably like 9 overlapping, just because parents are looking the second they get out of school.
How many weeks is your summer, Christine?
We end school the end of May, beginning of June. And then we are usually going back to school the week before Labor Day, I think. For some reason, we go back for like 2 days, and then we have Labor Day weekend. I don't know.
Yeah. That's where it was when I was in Maryland. It was a longer summer. And here we're on a balanced calendar here in Indiana. So we do 8-week summers only. And so we end the end of May, and they go back the end of July. So that's why I was asking, just because it's interesting to hear how you're doing so many different projects in one summer. And I was counting my days, and I'm like, I don't actually have that many days. So it might be a little bit easier on me. I could do half the size binder that you're doing.
Yeah.
I think the real question is, how much for your previous binders? I think that's what I would like to
know. I was thinking that this morning. I was like, you know what? These posters and all these class ideas already pre-made, that would be a great, you know, I'm not going to use them again. So like, yeah, absolutely.
I would definitely pay $100 for a binder just to not have to think through each project.
Right? Yeah. It's already all cute, all little described, AM, PM. Just got to change it out. Your dates.
And you're using all the same, distributors that we all use in the CCSA, right? You're using Gare and Biscuitports and Chesapeake and Biscouse. You're not pouring things. You're not getting things from local suppliers.
No, I'm not pouring anything. We don't really have anybody local that does that as well. And I'm kind of somewhat limited to the projects that I choose. Not to be, you know, favoritism, but I do order a lot from Gare just because I can buy directly from them. It's the only company I can buy directly from without going through another supplier. And they can be here in about less than 2 weeks. So maybe 10 to 12 days I can get it from Gare. The hardest part is when you do a summer camp like this, thank you, COVID, for making pottery so scarce that now I have to order plenty in time to make sure I can fulfill the projects I say I'm going to do. So I have to order, I usually order everything I need like the month before camp starts. And I just got to assume I'm going to fill those camps. And if not, they just go on the shelf because they're going to be stuff that can be used every day.
Yeah. I think that's the genius part of the whole thing that you've got going on is that you're doing plates, bowls, mugs, picture frames that you're already going to buy. It's just mm-hmm. buying them in bulk. Do you have a storage unit or do you have enough storage in your studio or is it just like boxes wall to wall in the party room that the kids are in?
I try to hide my clutter. We have like a little hallway that goes downstairs and then under those steps is a little bit of storage there as well. So we kind of store it all along there. And as soon as the order comes in, I already flag it. If it's a camp project, then we write on the box right away, sweets week, November or, you know, January, July, whatever we're using it for. And we set it aside so that the staff know not to put that out. And then each week we have a section. It's like a big shelf just down the hallway. And we swap that out every week. So if we know next week bees camp, we make sure everything on that shelf is for the staff for bees week. And then just keep changing it out. But the other shelf is hidden away from everybody.
I love that. We are not organized for summer camps. I'm not going to lie. After talking to, I think also, Cheryl, she has a, I think she has a binder too. And I need to do better. I'm telling you, I would pay lots of money. I would drive up to you and come get it even. Yes. Especially because I have snow and you mentioned you did not. So.
So that's a lot of intensive planning because you're planning the projects and then you're purchasing and you're storing. When do you start planning for summer camp?
Our goal right now this year is to try and have it for April 1st. Like if we can have a good idea of the themes, some of the classes, I won't order it until about the beginning of June. Right around there, the end of May or June, just so I've got my 2 week grace period for it to arrive, in and out of stock. And then if stuff comes in stock that's not in stock yet, then I'll swap it out or order it a little bit later. Like I might order August pieces. If they're not in stock, I'll order them in July and get them for August.
That's fascinating. Cause in my head, I was like, man, I got to start planning summer last summer. I'm going to start playing the second the kids leave last summer. I need to start writing my book and making my projects. But I guess that just comes with time of having done it so many years.
Yeah. And I think if you can just block off like, I don't know, like a couple days to yourself where you just got to come up with, you know, start with your 8 themes and then keeping it simple by saying, okay, on Mondays, we're going to do like we do clay. So you need a morning clay project and an afternoon that kind of goes with the theme. It's a lot of Googling. It's a lot of going through CCSA guides, to try and find it. And not only that, but the CCSA chatter as well. Like everybody's got so many good ideas, suggestions. Everybody's always sharing. So, you know, I'm sure if you pose the question, hey, looking to do a gamers week, what's everybody done? You're going to get 5 or 6 answers just then and there to help you with it. So, and then just looking up your suppliers and just going to like themes, maybe.
The guides are amazing. I love them so much. And like you guys were saying, that the different distributors that we have also have their own guides too sometimes. And it is honestly, the hard work is out there already done. We just need to put it into a wall binder. We just need to do
Miss Kimport's just launched their summer guide yesterday. I was just looking at it yesterday thinking, gosh, these are cute. I gotta order all these pieces.
Yeah, I'm sure they all have those, and Gare has like their recipes. So just go to like recipes and just be like, bam, print it off. I just need 12 plates for this class. It's pretty much done.
Awesome. So you were talking about hiring. You said you do a lot of the masterminding, and how many staff do you have for each of these classes?
I have one full time that's dedicated to doing 8 to 4:30 every day. So my camp runs from 9 till 4 every day. Some might want to, you know, extend that and charge a little extra, I guess, till 5, because most people work till 5. I get the question asked, you know, what if I'm like a half an hour late? You know, if you want to charge an extra $5 or something, you can for lateness or whatever. But for us, 9 to 4 works really well. And so we have one full-time person who comes in at 8, sets up camp, prints off the list, prints off the sign-in sheets, you know, gets it ready for the week. And then she cleans up and leaves at around 4:30. We have staff in the main studio to help cover her during the lunch break so that she can take, you know, 30 minutes to herself. And then we have somebody who's like part-time, a few that could fill in and teach a class, because a lot of these classes are classes that if you really looked at it, you could teach like a kid's class any day of the week for any of these. So most of my staff are capable to teach any of these classes and sub in should she be, you know, sick or anything like that. But 5 days a week for 9 weeks from 8 till 4:30 is a lot of kids and a lot of aspirin. So I'm trying to give her a little bit of a break. If she needs a day off or something, I'll just swap in another staff member.
Kind of go back, and this is a numbers question. You had said that your week long is 10 classes. So that means that your morning class and your afternoon class, right? That's what we're saying, is that there's 2 classes a day, 5 days a week, mm-hmm. if you're full time. Okay. I just needed to clarify that in my head, because I'm thinking through, like, literally I'm going to launch tomorrow exactly how you do it. So that's why.
Yeah. So you got your class, PM class, and 10 a week. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we have a rule in PA that if you cannot have more than 12 kids in a room with only one adult. And if you have like 13, it's considered daycare. Mm-hmm. You have to have, that's why I was like kind of thinking about the ratio of kids versus adults. And that's where we have the risk of, if we have a class of, you know, 20 people, we have to make sure we have 2 staff there. Or it's a daycare. It's weird. I don't know. I don't know how all that works, but I don't want to be a daycare. So I just want to make sure
I follow all the rules. I do not want to run a daycare either. So I did look into that. I did ask about that regulation here, but because it's taught as a class, it's like a classroom, it's a school setting. And because that restriction's not on the teachers, it's not on us as well. Now, if we were just, you know, not teaching in class and just, you know, play tables and running outside, yes, that would be different. And we have like a community table with a lot of games, puzzles, and whatever. So whenever they are done their project and finish up early, they can just go grab something from the table. Or we have like sensory bins from like Michael's or something. There was like a buy one, get one half off, or buy one, get one free or something, I think it was. And I just grabbed a whole bunch of them for summer camps, and they just occupy themselves during the lunch break, and staff will come in and just kind of sit with them. So it is like a cafeteria type setting at that point. And then we just reset at lunchtime and get them ready. If there's new kids coming in, because sometimes you're morning kids are leaving at 12. So you've got an hour to kind of like reset and clean a few tables to set up for your afternoon group.
So just to recap, 9 to 12 lunch break for an hour.
Yep.
1 to 4.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Writing it down. I'm telling you. Okay. We're gonna dive into this.
I think too, Christine, you want to be careful in your state, and always everyone who's listening, take a look at your state regulations. Christine brought up a really good point that in Pennsylvania, it might be different than in Indiana. I know that if we have school age kids and we're teaching a class, it's one type of restriction. If we have mixed age kids, like if we took on younger kiddos, it would be a different restriction. So always take a look at your state regulations before you implement any program. That's just a good editor's note there.
Absolutely. Well, and speaking of that, age groups. So what do you do for your age range? I guess I'll word it.
My age range typically tends to be between 5 and 10 years old. That tends to be like the sweet spot of the average of people that come. Not very often you get too many above 11 because they're kind of to that point where they are old enough to stay home, I think at 12 or something after you take a course or something. So, yeah, I find 5 to 10 is kind of the sweet spot for us.
Okay. Now, do you ever get somebody that says, well, the big sister is going to be joining and the little sister is, you have it at 5, so it's not that bad. We get that a lot. We're like, little sister is a little bit younger. Can they just come anyway? Do you ever get anything like that? How do you handle that? I guess is what I say. I know you do. How do you handle it?
Okay. Well, I never let like a 3-year-old come, but most of the time they're like, oh, they're 4, but they're going to be 5 in October. Like, is that okay? And their 8-year-old sibling is coming with them. And I will allow that. Yes.
You ever hear them say, but they're really mature?
Yes.
I love that.
What is your definition of mature for a 4-year-old? Yeah.
They tie their own shoe and that's their, I don't know, but I wonder what that,
yeah.
You do kind of, you don't want to say you'll bend the rules, but you're like, I love that chance too, to be able to like, just for you, I'll do
it. Ready to launch by April. You've got your book planned out. What does the launch look like? How do you tell the public, yes, you're accepting reservations?
We will post our little summer camp flyers. They're all done week by week and they look very consistent, for marketing purposes. And then we'll actually go back to our email rosters from last year and say, hey, we've just launched our summer camp. Here's the week of themes. Here's a link to check it out. We hope to see you this summer. And then send it to every single, and sometimes I put in there too, like, sorry if you're receiving this email multiple times. We see that you had so much fun last year's camp that you're going to be in a few of these emails type thing, because, you know, some of them sign up for half days a lot. So, you know, if I'm emailing the group and they were in on Monday, they're going to get another email from me in the Thursday group that they signed up for saying the same thing. So, you know, so I sometimes have to try and be a little bit careful with that just to make sure they don't get like 15 emails that day.
Well, maybe they will sign up then and let them know. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could always limit. I'm sure you use an email, like a constant contact or something like that. You could always limit like in your list not to repeat. But I guess that's like a lot of brain work for you then too, to kind of like separate out each list and not repeat between all of them.
Well, they do get an email through our marketing one, but they also get an email through our occasion system where we can go back to the class list and I can just email those people. And on that week, like if I had 16 full-time people signed up for the week of July, I'm going to go back to that group and I'm just going to send them an email saying, hey, we've just listed our summer camp for 2024. Go check it out. And then put the link in.
You're not exporting that list from there to Constant Contact and then emailing from, you're emailing right from occasion.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I learned so much doing this podcast. Like literally hosting the podcast is an education. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I love doing that. I do that for just about everything. Everything that I do, like if we do Sunday morning art camps, then I'm going to go back to my 2 or 3, camps a go for the kids that were signed up for that. And I'm going to send a link to them saying, hey, we're restarting this 6-week art camp. Like, in case you want to jump in this session, I'm going to email just that group that was already interested in it and has already attended.
That is so brilliant. I don't know why I don't do that. I think I've done that like maybe 3 times. I've done that for like adult camp before when we did like a 4-week hand building session, and then I emailed that group again for another project, mm-hmm. but I don't think I've ever utilized that function of my planning to the best of its ability. That's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Learning so much. Look at all this free education I'm getting.
Do you ever offer any kind of like early bird discounts or anything that, or like how can you talk about pricing? Are we, yeah. I don't know if that's true or not to talk about, but like, do you do anything like that?
I do not. Okay. Mine is just consistent $350 plus tax for the week, which okay. works out to $35 a class plus tax. And then the individual classes, I mark it up. So it's $40.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's for each half class, or I'm sorry, each
half class. Yeah. So if they wanted to sign up for the full day, it's going to cost them $80 to come that day.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I love that. Now, because like I know some people, I've used it, but then I've never like actually like made them actually pay the late fee. I will say that like if I want to charge $300, I will say it's $300 until this date, and then it's going to be $50 more. A lot of times I don't actually carry through with that, which I know all I'm doing is throwing away money. For some reason, but I just know that like, I'm like, I know life happens. And this is that same thing where I'm like, hey, just for you, I'm just going to waive this. It's okay. I'm just going to waive it. And then they're like, oh, you know, that's so nice. And really, I was like, I was never going to charge you that anyway, but, I wasn't sure. I know some people works, but
built in scare tactics. I like it. Right.
I don't know. Like I thought about trying like an early bird thing just to try and get more kids in there, but I don't know. I don't like to discount very often.
And that's where I was going to say, I agree with you. I think that that's why I like to like charge what you would instead of discounting yourself, increase it. That way then you're not giving yourself a break, or you're not taking away your own money. Like you're telling them that like, yeah, like it's really, you know, you don't have to tell them that like, you know, all the secrets, but you're like, oh yeah, it was totally discounted. That's not what I was going to charge this whole time. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I know. I think early bird, what I was going to like kind of piggyback off that is that early birds really work for when you're going to raise your prices. So if you are going mm-hmm. to raise your prices next summer, mm-hmm. then you offer an early bird this summer, and then maybe you don't follow through with charging people more, or you do or whatever. And you see how that works. And if they're willing to pay the, let's say, $75 a day for a full day camp, then next year, you know, you can charge $75 at the onset. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like a market feeler.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good way to test out the grounds. Well, you have given us so much information for us to start running with this. I'm so excited. What is your absolute favorite part about hosting and running these summer camps?
I like it when the kids, so like when the parents are like, we're just going to try this one class and see if they like it. And then they sign up for like the rest of the week, or like they'll just pick and choose. They're coming back every week. They're just picking a class. So I like it when they say they're just going to test it out, but then they keep coming back. 'Cause then we know we're doing something really well.
I love that. What do you think that the kids get, like, what's their most benefit that they get from the camps? I mean, other than, well, I'll let you answer. what do the kids get the most out of it?
I think that they get to hang out with other kids that they don't know. So like, that's a perk. They get to meet new friends. And they get to be creative. So even though we have like we are building this today in clay camp, we do allow them creative freedom to kind of be like, and so, you know, Josh made this because he just, this was where his creativity was headed today. Did not want to do anything that we suggested, but we just walk them through and say, this is how you do clay, attach it, whatever, help them. So yeah, I think that they get to come up with their own ideas as well. But yeah, when they're super proud of it, it's cool when they pick it up and they're like, look mom or look dad.
You don't have to have mom right there telling you like, oh wait, you're out of the lines. Let me clean that up for you. Or you don't have you're saying, well, this is the project we're going to do. You get that moment where you're like, you get to do whatever you want. And that's the best thing about the summer camps is that we take the pressure off the kids and let them create. And there's nobody kind of, I mean, we're there to make sure they're safe, but we let them create.
Yeah. We're not really hovering over them too much. I've seen a lot of that. In fact, when I first started summer camps at the old location, we made it a point to put 100% kid crafted on our flyers because we had this one mom come in one time and she was picking up her kids' camp projects. And she was just like, oh my God, is that what they made? And I was like, yes. And they were like, well, we've had them to other art camps and their projects were beautiful. And I said, I'm sorry, just so you know, we do not touch the kids' projects unless they really want us to help with them at all. So, you know, this is 100% kid crafted by your child, not by me. I didn't help them. I didn't fix it for them. You know what I mean? I was just like, my jaw just dropped at that point. And I was like, yeah, we're going to start putting 100% kid crafted on our flyers because that was just a terrible thing.
The audacity of the mom to say that her kids' art wasn't beautiful. I can't get out. That right? Always stumps me. We had that happen one time. We were hosting a field trip, actually, and the kids came in and I had told them, like, if they're school age kids, we'll do X, Y, and Z. If they're younger, we're going to do A, B, and C. And so A, B, and C happened to be taking a balloon, putting the balloon into the paint and putting the paint onto the canvas because they were 3 years old. They couldn't do a painted, you know, follow the line kind of thing. And so the kids did it. It looked great. They had so much fun. They had paint everywhere. And I get a call from the director and she goes, well, these aren't very good. And I was like, what does that mean though? She's like, well, they're ugly. I'm like, but the kids had fun and they experienced art and they're not ugly. They were really cute. And she's like, well, you just threw paint on a canvas. And I was like, well, I didn't do anything. The kids did it and they did a great job. And I was like, but we talked about that. You know, the school age kids will do a sit down project where they go, you know, green paint goes in this square and red paint goes in that square. And then we end up with a frog or whatever. But in that case, I was like, they're three. What is the problem? What is the problem?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, toddler time. We've had people where they're, and that's it. Actually, before I get into that, was the kid there when they said that?
No.
Because I was going to say, can I go hug her or something? Like, that's what I would do.
Yikes on bikes. That's rough.
I was going to say, but during toddler time, we've had people where their parents were like, this is nice. And I'm like, and then the little kid has a big old smile on her face, like, I made this. And like, yeah, like it's definitely, I get it that, and that's why we usually decrease the price a little bit for the toddler times. And we know that I'm like, just so you know, it's going to be their own creation. What I mean, and I usually will say there's no black paint on this plate for a reason, because that's what it all turns into. So
we don't allow black paint in any of our field trips either. I don't care the age. There's no black paint.
Smart. We do get parents ask us though, like, is there age appropriate activities, because it is such a wide range between 5-year-olds and 10 or 11-year-olds. And I say that every kid should be able to make the project. It just means that the 10 or 11-year-olds and whatever are going to look a little bit better than the 5-year-olds, but they should still all be capable of making the same project, because that's always a concern too. People always ask us, like, okay, well, like, what's the five, like, do you have it for 5-year-olds? And then do they do a different project for the older kids? No, I try and make sure that every age in that group can create that project. It's just going to look a little bit different for both groups.
Yeah, we did pinch pot animals last two summers ago. We've been doing them. We do them every summer, but we particularly did them two summers ago. And the five-year-olds made pinch pot turtles because you just pinch the pot and then you just add a head and it's a turtle. And the 13-year-olds in that class did pinch pot monsters. So they did the pinch pot. They cut mouths into them. There were tongues hanging out. There were teeth. There were eyeballs coming up off the top. And it's just a matter of intricacy at that point and imagination, not necessarily ability. They all can do it. It's just, what do they want to do with it?
Is there anything else that if you've never have done a summer camp, a day in your life at your studio, what is like the first three things that you would want to do?
I would say pick a couple themes and then create your consistent week of what you're going to do every week. Like I had said, like clay on Mondays and pottery on Tuesday and Thursday. Maybe we do afternoon movie on Friday. So that helps because we're like, just pick a movie and then find something that goes with it. And so I would say start with that and then go through your guides, message on Chatter. And then you should be able to come up with like, I don't know, even if you want to start like half the summer, like try 4 weeks or 2 weeks if you've never done it before.
No, I forgot to ask before I, the thought leaves my brain. Do you do fillers?
Yes. We always have a couple fillers. The person that I hired to do that, this is her second year doing my camp. She's going to do it again this year. She is in for a Bachelor of Education, which is phenomenal because, I mean, fillers is what they do. They do little tiny activities in between. So she just comes up with a couple like Pinterest ideas like, hey, if the kids finish up early, we're going to do, you know, this activity. But with that being said, if the kids do finish up early, we have like a big whiteboard that we bought so that the kids can come up and draw. So, or we might ask them questions about bees that week. Can somebody come draw a picture of a bee on the board? And then what do bees eat? So we try to keep it a little educational like that as well. We also have like one of those huge meeting flip chart things where it's like paper and you flip it because she'll say, same thing. We're going to draw a beehive on this. And I want everybody to paint their hand with acrylic, come up and stamp it and create their hand into a bee. So like just little tiny fillers like that as well are helpful. Or coloring book pages, perler beads are like a great filler. yeah. So she just comes up with one for each class in case they finish up. And then in between that, it's just kind of like, okay, we're all going to play a game now, you know, just have a few rotations of some games you want to do that week, what you want to play with them, 7-Up, you know, go old school.
What's a perler bead?
A perler bead?
Yeah.
They're like these tiny beads. So FYI, messy if they get all over the floor. But what you do is you buy these little tiny peg boards and the little beads sit on them in color. And then you take a transfer paper, melt them with an iron, and then they get to take it. Then they can take it home that day. So sometimes we'll just be like, go grab a container of perler bead and a clear and like a, what do you call them? The peg board and just go make something.
I didn't know they had a name. I don't know what we ever called them, but they were just the iron. I didn't know that they had like a name.
Yeah. Perler beads.
My boyfriend's daughter is 11. So I have been a witness to how hard those are to clean up. Yeah. So yeah, they're fun though. They're really fun.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. We were on the same page. Go ahead.
We've had a great time today talking with Jamie from Clay Cafe Avalon. You can learn more about her store at claycafeavalon.ca because she is in Newfoundland, Canada. Thank you for being our first international interview. Very exciting. If you want to find a ceramic-based summer camp near you, you can check out ccsaonline.com and click find a studio. if you want to join the CCSA and continue to get all these great conversations and learning from people like Jamie who've been doing things the best way for 15 years, you can go ahead and join us at ccsaonline.com, or you can message the pod and we'll get you all hooked up, or email us or send a carrier pigeon. We'll just get you all hooked up. It's going to be great. And Jamie, when can we expect your binders to be for sale on the marketplace so that we can not have to think through every single binder?
I will definitely get to work on it. I mean, I've got this whole binder here that would be super useful now and that I cannot repeat, which is my promise every summer. So we got to do 90 new binders this year.
Case, set, put it in a binder, mail it to me. $100. I'm done. Let's do it.
I know, right? Look at this. This is a huge, all of these classes are in this binder.
Awesome. This podcast is presented by the Contemporary Ceramic Studios Association. Own a ceramic studio and want to amplify your reach? Thinking of opening a contemporary ceramic art space but don't know where to start? The CCSA fosters community within the pottery arts space, helping you to grow your business, connect with other owners, share ideas, and learn new avenues for success. Check out all of our member benefits at ccsaonline.com.